If you'd like to, you can open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 6. I'd like to read a short section of Scripture here to begin our lesson this morning. Genesis chapter 6, beginning in verse 11, we're told, "Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. Then God said to Noah, 'The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. And behold, I am about to destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms and shall cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you shall make it: the length of the ark, 300 cubits, its breadth, 50 cubits, and its height, 30 cubits. You shall make a window for the ark and finish it to a cubit from the top and set the door of the ark in the side of it. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. Behold, I, even I, am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life from under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, and of the animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing of the ground after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. As for you, take for yourself some of all the food which is edible, and gather it to yourself, and it shall be for food for you and for them.' Thus Noah did according to all that God had commanded him. So he did." As many of you know, my family just got back from visiting the Ark Encounter in Williamstown, Kentucky. And in short, I will say, I was impressed. We read the account here of Noah building the Ark and making preparations for the flood. And maybe we even sit down and do some math, which we'll do here in a little bit. We think that we grasp just how big of a project this was that Noah undertook. But until you see the size of this thing with your own eyes, you can't really appreciate the magnitude or even the scope of the work that was involved in this endeavor. I was blown away. It gives me a new appreciation for what Noah went through. It took us, maybe just a minute and a half to read this whole section of him building the ark and stocking it and the animals coming to him. And sometimes we just think, it was no big deal. It was a massive undertaking. When you think about just the sheer size of the ark, and again, I would suggest to you, this is true for myself, I didn't really appreciate how big of a structure it is until I saw the replica. I think one of the reasons why we don't appreciate or really even understand or comprehend the size of the ark is because the dimensions of the ark that are given to us in the text are in cubits, right? It's 300 cubits long, it's 50 cubits high, and it's 30 cubits wide. Well, that doesn't mean a whole lot to me because I don't measure in cubits. I struggle with measuring in the metric system, right? If something's given to me in meters and centimeters, I struggle with converting that because I think in feet and inches. That's the way most of us in America here think. Well, what is a cubit? Well, a cubit is traditionally defined as the length from a man's elbow to the tip of his middle finger. But if all of us guys were to stand up in here today and put our arms next to each other, I guarantee there would be quite a bit of deviation in the length from elbow to tip of your finger. And that's true also in the ancient world. When you go back and you look at some of the archaeological evidence and things like that, the length of the cubit differed from culture to culture, from setting to setting, from time to time. In fact, the Egyptians, they had a short cubit, which was the equivalent of 17.5 inches. But then the Egyptians also had a long cubit, which was equal to 22 inches. So are we talking short cubits or long cubits, right? The people who built the Ark Encounter in Kentucky, they settled on a 20.4 inch cubit was their standard. And that's based on the fact that there's such a plethora of different lengths. In fact, some cubits, I think one of the Roman cubits I read measured more than 3 feet long. So you got a wide range here of possibilities. And we don't know for sure exactly what the length of the cubit was here in the days of Noah, when God gave him this instruction. So we have to do a little bit of guesswork. We'll stick with their number, 20.4 inches, to give us an idea. This will at least give you a feel for how big the Ark Encounter is in Kentucky. But we plug our 20.4 inches in, and we start doing some math, and we come up with the fact that 300 cubits times 20.4 equals 6,120 inches. Well, let's put it into feet, divide that by 12, 510 feet long. Okay? It's 85 feet wide and 51 feet high. Now, for some of us, that still doesn't do a whole lot because we have a hard time estimating distances. In fact, if I were to ask you guys, how tall do you think this wall is here? There's a few of you that could probably give me a pretty close guesstimate. How many of you think it's less than 10 feet? How many of you think it's more than 15 feet? How many of you think that it's 13.5 feet? It's actually about 13 and a half feet from the stage here up to the ceiling. That's according to some old notes that I had. So we can get the tape measure out and measure it later if we want to. But we sometimes have a hard time guesstimating size and feet like that. So we like to make comparisons, right? And so we say, well, let's compare it to a football field, right? A football field's dimensions are, some of my football players could probably tell me, 160 feet wide, right? 53.3 yards wide and 120 yards long if you include the end zone. So it's 360 feet long. So let's lay the arc out on a football field. Almost 1.5 football fields long. In fact, more than 1.5 football fields long. 510 feet long, 85 feet wide, 51 feet tall. Now, we try to wrap our minds around what those sizes are. The arc, 1.5 football fields long, about half the width of a football field, right? A football field is 160 feet wide, so about half the width of the football field, 85 feet. When we think about how tall it is, 51 feet, well, we could say maybe a five-story building, right? But buildings vary in height. Some stories are 8 feet, some of them are 10 feet, right? So we don't know exactly. Maybe it's better to think about one of those 53-foot-long tractor-trailer semi-trailers, right? You tip that up on its end, that's 53 feet from back to front. That's how tall this is. In fact, it's, what did I put in my notes here? 3.75 times higher than this wall that's right behind me, if my measurement was correct, right? So imagine three of those stacked on top of each other plus another 3/4. It's pretty tall. It's a pretty big structure. The total square footage of the ark, each deck, if it had a lower, middle, and upper deck, 43,350 square feet per deck. So total square footage of occupiable area, 130,050 square feet of floor space. The volumetric capacity of the ark, if my calculations are correct, is 2.2 million cubic feet of volume that it could could carry. And again, we try to do equivalence with those things for square footage. We say, well, it's the size of 2.5 football fields. That's the square footage. Maybe if you're a farmer, it's the equivalent of 3 acres of land. That's how much square footage. The volume is the equivalent of 363 semi-trailers or 522 standard livestock cars on the railroad. It could hold up to 125,000 head of sheep. That's how big this structure is. And again, when we see it in our mind's eye, we think that's impressive. We think it's large scale. We think it's pretty big. Maybe we even think that it's massive. But I'm telling you, when you see it with your own eyes, standing underneath of it, it is really big. And I'll be honest, I was in shock at how big this thing was. Like I said, I've done the math. I've read the articles that's figured out how many animals could fit on there and all this kind of stuff. And you think, yeah, that's a pretty big thing. And then you see how big it is. And it is incredible. I was blown away by the magnitude of this project. And that was before I even went inside the ark. When you go inside and you begin to look at the carpentry and how everything is fitted and put together, its construction, I started thinking about, my first thought was, how difficult would this be for me to do in the 21st century with the availability of a fully functional wood shop with power tools and an endless supply of drill bits and, you know, blades and all this kind of stuff. If I run out, I can go down to Menards and get a few more supplies. I mean, it's just a monstrous amount of work. When you first walk through the entrance of the ark, they had kind of a cutaway of the side. They've cut a hole in the bottom of it for you to go up through on a ramp. And they give you an example on the side, kind of like a cross section of what the walls of the ark would have looked like and the different layers of timber that are in there. And they're staggered so as to prevent water from leaking and things like that. And you think about, how did they join all of those boards together? You know? A lot of it was probably mortise and tenon joining with wooden dowels and pegs. And those of you who aren't woodworkers, you don't understand what that means. But let me tell you something. It is a lot of work, even with plunge routers and table saws and dado blades, to create a piece of furniture that has mortise and tenon joinery on it. And they would have had to have done hundreds of thousands, if not millions of those, to fit the sides of the ark together and join it all together. It just blows my mind. They would have done it by hand. That's the part that impresses me so much. It would have been so much work to go into this structure. When we think about the construction of the ark itself, not just how big it is, but just the process of putting it together, it blows my mind. How many of you ever watched on maybe YouTube or something like that, one of those time-lapse videos of the Amish people raising a barn? You know, it's all in fast forward. And it's amazing. You've got hundreds of these guys. And in the morning, it starts out with a picture of a pile of wood. And by the end of the video, by the end of the day, oftentimes, you've got a barn that's been raised all the way up, fully clad and everything. But you've got hundreds of these guys who all know what they're doing, working in sync and unison with each other, putting all that together. I don't know if Noah had a small army of laborers to help him with this project or not. There's a likelihood that it might have just been him and his three sons working on the project. But even if he had a small army of hired workers, the scope of the work and how much labor went into constructing it boggles the mind. I think, you know, sometimes we make the mistake, and this was one of the things we fell into the trap of, being so impressed with the possible ways that they could have constructed the ark. And we think, how could ancient man, have possessed the technology to be able to build a structure so big and so efficiently. And I think that's a fallacy in our thinking. We've been trained here in America, especially if you've gone to public school, but even by just media and society and science in general, that when we think of ancient man, what do we think of? We think of Neanderthals, right? The Stone Age. And because the popular theory of evolution has said that it took man to evolve from ape to Homo sapien, it took him so long and he went through so many stages that for so long he was just a dummy out there beating two rocks together, you know? Go back to Genesis chapter 4 with me, though. And notice what we're told about one of the descendants of Cain, who, by the way, would have perished in the flood. And so this is technology that they possessed prior to the flood. We read about some of Cain's grandsons, the sons of Lamech. Verse 20. Adah gave birth to Jabal. He was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. That's not so hard for us to wrap our minds around, ancient man bringing up livestock and being herdsmen and shepherds and things like that. But notice verse 21, his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all those who play the lyre and the pipe. Ancient man had musical instruments. We've made that observation in previous studies. But notice verse 22, as for Zilpah, she also gave birth to Tubal-Cain, the forger of all implements of bronze and iron. There were blacksmiths back in the day, in the ancient world. They had metal tools. They had nails. They had saws. They had drills. They had those kinds of things, though it was all manually powered, not electrically powered the way we have it today. But there's no doubt that Noah, at least Noah, far from being a primitive, unsophisticated rube, he was a master carpenter. The structure of the ark itself, it blew my mind to think about the fact that all of the wood in that would have originally started in a forest. And Noah and his sons would have had to go down and cut down the trees, mill them into the timbers and the lumber that they needed in order to build the ark. We watched a short little documentary while we were there, and they made the observation that the average roughly 3,000 square foot timber framed house today that they sell in these kits, you know, they contain roughly 15,000 board feet of lumber. The ark contains 1.5 million board feet of heavy timber for the framing alone. When you think about all of the fixtures and all of the cladding and everything else that went into finishing the structure of the ark, all of the stairs and the ladders and the cages and everything else, it's over 3.3 million board feet of lumber total contained in the ark. In fact, they boast about the fact that right now the Ark Encounter in Kentucky is the largest freestanding timber frame structure in the world today. Now that's pretty impressive, but think about this. When Noah built his ark some 4,000 years ago, it was just as big, if not bigger, than the ark that they built in Kentucky. So they can boast that it's the largest freestanding timber frame structure in the world today, but Noah's would have been certainly the largest structure probably built up until that point in history. And so it's pretty impressive. When you begin walking through the ark and you see how everything is joined together with all the mortise and tenon and the lap joints, and they had to use bolts and nuts and steel brackets to hold theirs together, because that's what modern U.S. building codes require. But Noah probably would have done all of that with pegs. And so every part would have been handcrafted to put this thing together. And you just think about how much work that would have been to do. And in addition to the structure of the ark itself being made by hand, Noah also had to construct from scratch all the furnishings of the ark, all of the beds, all of the tables, all of the cages, all of the shelves, all of the pens, all of the crates, all of the storage bins. Everything else that was on the ark had to be made by Noah and his family as well, by hand. I know how long it takes me to make a simple piece of furniture. okay, in my electrically powered wood shop. And that's with buying pre-milled lumber from Menards. And I looked at some of these cages that they had made, and I thought to myself, I could probably reproduce that, but that would be a week's long worth of work with my power tools if I had to do it by myself. And he has made hundreds of them. And it's just trying to wrap your mind around how much time it took to build the ark and everything then that also went on it. You know, he didn't run down to Home Depot and buy some more, utility totes to put some extra stuff on. If they needed another storage bin, he had to make it. And so it just blows my mind how much work went into the ark. When we think about then also, you remember in verse 21, not just the building of the ark, but in chapter 6 and verse 21, God told him, "As for you, take for yourself some of all the food which is edible and gather it to yourself. It shall be for food for you and for them." And the "them" there is for the animals. And so they had to not only gather up enough food to feed themselves and all of these animals. And remember, by the way, they're on the ark for over a year, okay? But they also had to store that food. They had to store the water. They had to store the oil. Well, if they had to make clay pots to put that in, they had to fashion all of those themselves. And when you go into the ark and you see the rows upon rows of clay pots and jars where all of the drinking water and the cleaning water and the oil for the lamps and everything would have been stored, you think, man, that would have been a full-time job just making the vessels to carry the material in. Those are the kinds of things that I never even thought about when I read the story of Noah's Ark here in Genesis. Everything that went in to making it work. And by the way, for those of you who are curious like me, I found out what they do with the poop. Okay? That has always been one of the things that I have thought about. What do you do with all this poop, you know? And they had a pretty interesting way of dealing with that. But again, those are things that you have to think through. There had to have been a way to do that. We don't oftentimes think about that stuff when we're reading this short, very abbreviated story of the event itself. But you think about them gathering the food. How much food did they have to gather? Well, that would depend on how many animals there were on the ark with them. We know there was 8 people. Right? That would be easy to figure out, rations for a year for 8 people. But how many animals did they have? Well, we read there in chapter 6, verses 19 and 20, that they took 2 of every kind, a male and its female. But what's interesting to me is that you jump down to chapter 7, and now there's a distinction made between the clean and the unclean animals. And with the clean animals, he says you're to take them 7 pairs, or 7 sevens, a male and his female. And there is some debate about whether or not that means 7 pairs or 14 total, 7 males, 7 females, or just 7 total. But either way you take it, that's going to start adding up to be a lot. Now, I think one of the difficulties we think of is we think of how many different kinds of animals there are in existence today. And we start thinking like, oh man, there's horses and there's donkeys and there's zebras and there's mules, you know. Well, he didn't have to take one of each of those. He only needed to take one of that kind on the ark. Because even when you look like, for example, in the dog family, you've got dogs, you've got coyotes, you've got wolves. All of those come from a common ancestor. And so he didn't take one of every single variety of the kind. He just took 2 of each kind. And so estimates have suggested that at the time there was probably as many as 1,800 different kinds of animals that needed to be taken onto the ark. Only the land animals that breathe air needed to be taken onto the ark. And of those, 1,800 different kinds. So if it was just 2 of every kind, a pair, a male and a female, that gets us 3,600, if I did my math right. But remember, of the clean, they had to take 7 pairs. So could have been as many as 7,000 individual animals on the ark. But again, we estimated that the ark has enough volumetric capacity to hold 125,000 sheep. Now, a sheep is maybe, you might call it average size, because lots of animals are smaller than a sheep. But then you have some animals that are quite a bit bigger than the sheep. But on average, it's a good estimate. So there would have been plenty of room on the ark for all of these animals. But still, they all had to be fed, they all had to be watered, they all had to be cleaned up after, and that would have been a great deal of work. And making the cages and the houses and the rooms for all of these animals to be in was all done by hand. Another thing that occurred to me as I was walking through the ark, it says in verse 14 that you shall cover it inside and out with pitch. And that was to waterproof the ark. And I started thinking about how much work that would be. So I did a few calculations. The total surface area of the outside of the ark is 147,392 square feet. You got to cover that with pitch. And once you finish with the outside, you got to go to the inside and do that. So times that by two. Now, I don't know if I need somebody maybe to double check my math, but I think an average gallon of paint covers like 350 to 400 square feet. That was what I did on a quick Google search. If I did my math right, to cover the ark with pitch, if it took the same amount of, if pitch covers the same surface area as a gallon of paint, you're talking about 369 gallons of paint. Of pitch. Where did it come from? How did it get to the ark? And then think about applying that. Would you want to be the son who goes out there with the brush, working on the ark, painting, you finally finish one side, oh man, I got to go to the other side, you know? And then you finish the outside, and oh, now it's time to go and start working on the inside. I mean, that is a monumental project in and of itself, all done by hand. So we start thinking, man, this had to have taken a long time to build this ark, right? So how long did it take? Well, there are three popular views. The first is that it took him about 120 years. And that comes from Genesis chapter 6 and verse 3, where the Lord said, "My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he is also flesh. Nevertheless, his day shall be 120 years. Now, I take that statement as God saying, looking down on the corruption on earth and saying, I'm going to give these folks another 120 years before I bring the flood. Not that man was never going to live beyond 120 years from that point forward. It's interesting, you look at the rest of the book of Genesis, if that's what God meant, that from now on nobody lives more than 120 years, everybody in the book of Genesis outlived what God said they wouldn't live longer than. So I take it as, from the time God looks and says, I'm going to give it another 120 years before I bring judgment. And so some people suggested maybe that's when God told Noah to start building the ark, when he decided he was going to bring the flood. Another popular view is that it took him about 100 years. And that's because we read in chapter 6 and in verse 10, Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. God looked on the earth, behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. Then God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come, build the ark. Well, the then comes after the idea of Noah becoming the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, which if you jump back into chapter 5 and verse 32, he was 500 years old when he began becoming the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. They're not triplets, by the way. The oldest was born when Noah was 500 years old. The second was probably born when he was 502. And the third, Ham, the youngest, was probably born sometime after that. But the flood comes in the 600th year of Noah, Genesis chapter 7 and verse 6. So from the time he became a father when he was 500 to the time that the flood came, that's 100 years. And since the next thing in the text after telling us that Noah became a father is that God told him to build the ark, some people said, well, it took him 100 years to build the ark. Others would suggest that it's even less time than that. Because you notice in his covenant that he makes with Noah in verse 18, he says, I'll establish my covenant with you and you shall enter the ark. You and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. And the suggestion is made that, well, if Noah and his wife and their three sons and their three sons' wives were included in the covenant, all eight of those people must have been in the picture when God makes that deal or that covenant with him. And so we have to allow enough time for the boys to be born when Noah's 500, to grow up enough to get married at least and have a wife. And so some suggest, well, let's give about 25 years for that to happen. And that's where they come up with the idea of 75 years. I would put it between 100 years and 75 years. But the reality is that either way you slice it, this was a monumental project. And the magnitude of the mission, at least in our minds, was probably more than a man could handle on his own. This was, quite literally, from our perspective, a lifetime worth of work. And that's what it took Noah to accomplish building the ark. But understand this, this could only be accomplished through a strength and a plan which God supplied to Noah and his family. Brianna made an observation to me, and I'll share it with you. Thinking about how long he was working on the ark, even if it was only 75 years, how many times over that 75 years did Noah hit his thumb with a hammer and say, "Enough! I quit!" Or being ridiculed by his neighbors, ready to give up. There were so many opportunities that Noah could have given up on the work, on the task. Say, it's just too big. But the mission was too important. And so he didn't give up. Had it not been for the faithfulness of Noah, doing everything that he did according to all that God had commanded him, understand this, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today. A lot was riding on this monumental task that Noah undertook. But there's more. Real briefly, consider something to make application for ourselves today from what we've talked about. There is a great correlation between the salvation of Noah in the ark through the flood and our salvation in Christ. Another thing that really was impressive to me, remember in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 16, after he told him to make the window or the opening in the ark to finish it a cubit from the top, he says, set the door of the ark in the side of it. In this giant structure, there is only one door. And albeit it's a pretty big door, but only one way in and one way out of the ark. It's interesting to me that every living thing, whether that was Noah or his wife or his sons or his daughter-in-laws, the eight people, or any of the animals, everything that survived the judgment of the flood passed through that single door on the ark. And what's really interesting to me, you get to Genesis chapter 7, verse 16. Those that entered the ark, male and female of all flesh, entered as God commanded him. And notice this, and the Lord closed it behind him. I was a little bit troubled when I came up to the ark and I saw how low the door was on the ark. And I thought, ooh, that's going to be a potential leaking point. But when God closes the door and seals it up for safety, you can guarantee that you'll be preserved. God is the one who sealed them in. God is the one who preserved them. God is the one who protected them. He provided them with salvation and safety from the flood and the destruction that that judgment brought. And there is an impressive parallel for us today, because we too are given a single door through which we must enter if we want to be saved from the coming judgment and destruction of the world. That door, though not in the side of a wooden ark, put there by a master carpenter, was nevertheless brought to us by a humble carpenter. He himself being the door. Jesus said of himself in John chapter 10, verses 7 through 9, that should be, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear him. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. What's more, Jesus is not only the door, he is the only door. He'll say a couple chapters later in John chapter 14 and in verse 6, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Just as the ark had only one door leading to salvation, today we have only one door through which we can enter for salvation. Peter makes this connection in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 20, where he says, corresponding to that, corresponding to Noah and the salvation that God brought him through the ark, through the flood, corresponding to that, he says, baptism now saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It is by entering into a relationship with God through Jesus Christ that we find salvation. And Peter makes the connection with baptism because, as Paul will say in Galatians chapter 3, verses 26 and 27, for you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. There's a sense in which Jesus is not just the door, he is the ark. It's by getting into him that we will experience salvation. And we put him on, Paul says, in baptism. But notice this, as you look at that passage in 1 Peter, even though it may be through baptism that we walk through that door, the saving doesn't come by our own strength or our own power or our own work. It comes from God. It's not the removal of dirt from the flesh. It's an appeal to God to wash us clean. And so just like Noah could have never accomplished the task of building the ark had it not been for the strength and the wisdom and the insight and the understanding and the ability that God gave him, understand too, we cannot be saved by our own imaginations, our own plans, our own understanding, our own wisdom, our own strength, our own power. That comes from God. And when we think about the scope of the work that God has done to make salvation possible, Jesus freely leaving heaven, coming to earth, living perfectly, dying willingly for our sins, and then rising powerfully to prove that he is the Son of God. When we think about the magnitude of that work that made it possible to offer us that door for salvation, we ought to be blown away. We ought to be stunned. We should be in awe of the great salvation that God has accomplished through Jesus Christ. The question is, will we have a faith like Noah that will trust and obey in God? Will we have enough faith to walk through that door, to be baptized into Christ, to get on the ark, so that we can inherit the salvation that God has promised to us through the blood of his Son?